Thank you, Joanne, wherever you are. Oh, she's hiding back there. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Don. And thank you, Santa. Okay. In the last month or so, can you hear me? In the last month or so, Pittsburgh lost its only billionaire, I believe, Henry Hillman. And of course, I have a poem on Henry Hillman, but I have a new one too. I'll start with the original, which is about Henry and everybody knows the wife, Elsie. Okay, 67. This is in Me First, which is available right at this table. Okay, me and the Hillmans gather in their cozy, modest mansion when they became Pittsburghers of the year. Me, a freelance writer, Henry, a billionaire, former industrialist, now resting in investments, Elsie Hilliard, a Republican, force on every level of government. They welcome me with charm and wrinkles. They wouldn't sit for separate interviews, so we all chat in the den on a rainy autumn afternoon, fire blazing. He rarely meets the press. The whale only gets harpooned when it spouts, he says. But he's open, friendly. She's more guarded and careful. I try to plug the lamp. Pardon me. I try to plug a lamp to link. I'm trying to do here. I think maybe this poem's kind of awkward. Okay. I try to unplug a lamp to link my tape recorder to their electricity. I want that lamp on, says Elsie, and sends an assistant for a solution. She admits there are mostly Democrats in the family, and they're well-known Republicans, really. In unison, the Hillmans declare of George Bush the younger, we don't talk about him, though they more than supported his campaign. With my story, the magazine runs a photo of them in Florida for a tsunami fundraiser with golfer Craig Norman, Bill Clinton, and Bush the Elder, Elsie's most prominent relative. It looks like a golf foursome plus. The couple shows me their dueling pianos, ancestors' portraits guarding the front hall, the kiddie table and chair set up for a visit of the great-grandchildren. Elsie, convinced that the Hillmans are like regular people, even with two extra homes and a yacht docked in sunshine. The term billionaire tends to separate, she laments. They talk about passing on philanthropy to their descendants. I walk through sizzling garlic on the way out as the chef trussles up supper. Later, Elsie thanks me for the story. Henry wants me to write for him. Every few months he calls, says they are getting ready for the project. I meet with one of his attorneys. He says the project has no deadline. He doesn't believe it will ever be done. Wants to know my age. Yeah, I have a Medicare card. I take the assignment, which comes with the threat of termination, but I can't say a word about the glories of this secret world, the billionaire and his business. You'd love to hear it, I know. Thank you. That's an old one. I think I should bury it, actually. Okay, this one is, it was born on May 27th, mucking up with a billionaire. I call this a prose poem because the lines just got out of control, and I let them. And so that's why I'm calling it a prose poem. I worked for Henry Hillman for such a short time. The lawyers didn't make me sign the secret clause. I saw nothing. Name your salary, they said. $2.50 an hour. Maybe my advisor meant $2.50 an hour and not $250. I earned $500 just looking for a pen and paper and jotting down a few notes. I felt a little guilty about that, but I figured the computer was probably not private. From day one, they warned me time might be shortened. I never saw Henry alone. He was protected. Assignment: write a history of the company. No deadline. In no time, I had lunch with Henry and his regulars. His chef prepared a vegetarian special for me. I asked some questions and a meeting was set up. Turned out it was a nasty attack between two guys, shocking as watching hockey players battle each other with sticks waving through the air, blood staining the uniforms. You should be ashamed of what you did to me, the guy complained to another. It was a dark mystery to me. Business is a dirty game, I figured. One guy chewed me out for the confrontation. Another guy came in and fired me quite nicely. I turned down a luncheon to soothe our separation. I could have used a business course. English majors are as naive as newborn babes. Should I bury that one too? This is called Ground from the Rumor Mill. The flower guy parked between Saks and McDonald's got arrested. He tried to help the fuss budget who wanted something exciting, not a daisy, lily, or rose, something that will grab attention. He hadn't a bit of patience. Her verb nudged him. He grabbed her ass. This is in my newest book, Knitting the Andy Warhol Bridge. Oh, God, you holding this time against me?
No. Oh, God. No, just relax, read your book. More Joe.
Okay, this is the title poem for this, Knitting the Andy Warhol Bridge. Becomes blankets for the homeless. Andy Warhol's small Carpatho-Russian mother must have gathered like this with her New York cronies to gab and giggle about Andy, his projects, and what their old men think of her shy pop artist. Talent flows through these knitters' fingers, shades, designs. They cover the tall railings of the Warhol Bridge, not far from Brother Paul Warhol's scrap metal yard. They think Paul was smart becoming an artist too. Some loop troopers make tight blocks of magic, green buds on a blood red background, others so disjointed. The gleaming blue of river seeps through yarn windows, pink, purple, tea, teal, pieces blend with colors behind. A pattern pulls like a blanket in a shared bed. The busy artists resort to canned soup for lunch. Their needles, hands, thoughts demand beauty, order, peace, and they send it dancing across the Warhol Bridge. A homeless Marine on sidewalk seat asks for change, first in line to cover cold with this knitted warmth. Thank you. Okay, I got this, I was prompted by this by Tony Norman's column this morning about JFK. I think it's his 100th birthday or something. Anyway, this is me and JFK. So young, so handsome, so articulate, so Irish, so Catholic, so humorous. Somehow, we had all reached the top with him. My first president. I went door to door for him, reported to a consulate around the corner, adored Camelot. When I berated David L. Lawrence for not supporting Kennedy, he said he knew that being Catholic had cost him when he ran for governor of our state. I never in my heart lost faith in him. Even when Camelot grew uglier than the original, I stood sobbing in my living room as his caisson rolled by, his window veiled in black, his widow veiled in black, his two babies, his brothers stricken in their mourning suits, de Gaulle and other greats moving on foot down Pennsylvania Avenue, crowds hushed, still wounded by those bullets in Texas. Is my time up? Yeah. Thank God. Thank you for your patience.